Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. Okay. It's I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay. You're turning into one of them now, huh? You're becoming becoming Mountain Lion, as you would say. You're becoming Mountain Lion.
Mountain Lion is the greatest. I just wish I saw that Rick Ross got two like real lions. I don't like that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wish that like I could connect with Mountain Lion. You know?
Why Mountain Lion? Why that animal?
You know what happened? This is what happened. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because people think I'm obsessed. But let me tell you what happened.
You are.
What happened was I gave you a very fair warning about Mountain Lion early on in this podcast. And then you threw it back in my face. Let's be honest. You threw it back in my face. That's what I mean. Like if we're being honest, you threw it back in my face. That's fine. It's fine, Rachel. You threw it back in my face.
Whatever.
Okay?
Fine.
And so that made me research him. And that made a lot of other people around the world send Mountain Lion related content as much as they could. Rachel, what happened is I fell in love with Mountain Lion.
It's getting out of control.
With the majesty. I fell in love with the craftiness. I fell in love with the plight.
No, it's out of control because it followed me to Louisiana. It followed me to the outside.
Wow.
My cousin tried to scare me about mountain lions because he listens to the podcast. Shout out to Tremaine. Because he listens to the podcast and because you've talked about it so much, he says something about mountain lions. I said, I can't escape it. Here I am in White Oak, Louisiana, and I can't escape mountain lion.
You know what's crazy is you're probably more connected to Mountain Lion than I am.
Enough.
It is. It's true because this was really about you figuring out your whatever. You know what?
Enough.
How was your trip to Dallas? Was it hot?
It was hot. I didn't spend that much time outside, but I've still been in Dallas. Here's the thing.
You're not in Dallas now.
I'm not in Dallas. I got in this morning, but I got stuck in Dallas last night. I was supposed to be here. I was in the airport for hours. I was one of those people. They kept pushing back my flight. 30 minutes delayed, an hour and a half, 2 hours. I was like, you know what? I'm going to stick it out because I checked the bag, which I don't like to check bags, but I had to check the bag. I'm going to see it through. They move us. We switch terminals. I go to the other terminal. I'm in line for Subway. I'm like, got to eat dinner. As soon as I step in line, they're like, your flight's canceled.
Subway, nigga.
Had to. Had Subway. Nothing else was open because I waited so late. I said, I'm having the Subway. Got an alert. Your flight's canceled. I had been in the airport for 4 hours. Then I had to try to find my bag because I don't know what they do, right? Does the bag stay? Do you wait for your bag? This has never happened to me before. Customer service line, I am not even exaggerating. At least 200 people. I thought these people are going to be here forever. So I bought another flight. And then tried to reroute my bag for the morning. And they were like, oh, yeah, I did it for you. Okay, great. Get to the airport. Go back home to my parents. Get to the airport this morning. Get there early. I'm not an early airport person. I hate to get there early. I check again. She's like, you know what? No news is good news. I'm pretty sure your bag is on this flight. I'm like, okay. Baggage doesn't claim. Ticket doesn't say that. She's like, I'm pretty sure it's on. I land in Burbank. It tells me. My bags are at LAX. They put them on the first flight in the morning to LAX. Where are they now? I don't know. Still don't know. I got to leave tomorrow for Vegas. I don't have any of my stuff.
I'll be honest with you. You don't have any of your stuff. You're back at home. You got all kinds of other stuff you could wear.
My good wig was in there. I have the stuff I hold my wig down with was in there. My specialized face wash, because you know I'm struggling with my skin. Like, I have some stuff in there.
I feel you. It's annoying. It's annoying.
I can't go to Vegas looking crazy.
I can't. So, look, I understand, Rachel.
Kalika's going to be by herself in Vegas.
I understand. It's funny. I was just about to ask you what you're going to Vegas for.
Going to Vegas tomorrow.
Going to watch some people cosplay as R&B stars. hey, Donnie, you know what I heard Rachel say?
What?
I heard her say check. Fall. You better run a make on that license plate. You could have had a V8 instead of a 28 slug to your cranium. I got 6 and I'm aiming them. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. You better check yourself before you wreck yourself. Me and Donnie were just going over. Before Rachel got on, me and Donnie, for some reason, I hit Donnie with a random verse, and then Donnie knew the song. And then me and Donnie just, I started singing Check Yourself. And then Donnie came back, and me and Donnie started just going back and forth.
I missed out. Check Yourself.
Yeah, I love that song. Donnie.
That's my favorite Ice Cube. Yeah.
Donnie, give the people a little bit of Check Yourself.
Check yourself for your wreck yourself, cause I'm bad for your health. I come real stealth, dropping bombs on your moms.
Dropping bombs on your moms.
Doing foul crimes,
I'm a nigga with the Alpine 7460. Always letting tricks know.
You know what? Cut, clip that. Let's play that for Cube.
That song is hard, man. That song is hard. I'm gonna be honest with you, man. I love Cube, man, my summer vacation. I love so much Cube. Cube is the man. That's Cube's hardest record to me, I'm not going to lie. But he also got 4 or 5 niggas in the mother shit, better known as the lynch mob. He got so many joints. I can't wait to have Cube on the show. By the way, when I have Cube on the show, I'm just going to disappoint y'all because I'm not going to do a whole bunch of talking about the goddamn Trump contract with Black America shit. That shit is washed. Rachel could talk about it. I'm going to talk about other stuff.
You calling me washed? You calling me washed?
No.
You have to address it. We have to talk about it, though. Fine. I'll ask those questions.
You could talk about it. I want to talk about, you know what I want to ask you? There's something that happened in Straight Outta Compton that I don't think ever happened in life. This is what my question for Ice Cube is. They were going in to perform, and Easy gives out a bunch of shirts or whatever, and then he goes, let's get this money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Easy ever said that.
That's what you go ahead.
No. Every time I see that part.
I can distinctly see that part.
Every time I see that part, let's get that money.
It was an ad lib.
I don't think. I don't think he said that, man.
And they all laughed. Come on, y'all. So you gotta ask him if he laughed at that in real life.
I'ma ask him if he laughed at it. I'ma ask him if Easy ever went, let's get this money. I don't think he ever said that.
And if y'all don't know, we have Q coming up on the show. We aren't just saying this isn't a hypothetical thing. We will actually ask these questions.
We'll have an Ice Cube. And obviously we have to talk about some of that stuff, but let me tell you something, man. And this is very problematic, what I'm about to say. Last night, there was a lot of Michael Jackson watched in this house.
What you watch?
So, I can't remember how we got on this, but watch Captain EO. You know, at the end, he does Another Part of Me. And Another Part of Me is like such a fucking, oh man, it's just so hard, man. It's just like when I was a little kid, man, and like I was afraid of like the end of the world. Like
the rapture, as in like the rapture?
Not the rapture. I was never as afraid of the rapture. Let me tell you what, can I tell you why I was never afraid of the rapture?
Please.
I was never afraid of the rapture because you really can't lose in the rapture. You know?
You can be left behind.
Even if you're left behind, now you know what you got to do to get right. So if you get wrapped up into the rapture, right? Number one, now it's like, oh, they're gone. Okay, so it's time to get right. Okay, my bad. I didn't do well enough on the first time, but now I got to go to summer school. And summer school is the people that's left behind. Now it's gonna suck, right?
Yes.
It's going to suck for everybody. It's going to be really bad. But still, you know what's at the end of the tunnel. So like, what the hell is the big deal? The rapture is just kind of like, to me, it was the national anthem before the big game. Like, I'm ready now. Like, I'm ready. This means we start.
Hell no. Donnie, were you scared of the rapture?
Terrified. That Left Behind movie?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah.
They couldn't buy no groceries. You know, they can't play basketball. They can't do nothing.
Not Christian, basketball.
Kill you. You know what I mean? But so look, so this is the issue with Michael Jackson. I know people love when we're hypocrites on this show because everybody is so pure out there. You guys don't have anything that's difficult for you to confront. I was afraid of like a nuclear war and a world war, right? And another part of me would come on and the song would comfort me. Because I'm serious, because Michael Jackson would be like, this is my message to you. Like, we're all together. You're just another part of me. We're all together. And I would look at a concert on TV with Michael Jackson, and I would see so many different people going nuts. I would see white people. I would see black people. I would see people from the... I would see so many other people gathered around this message that in my head as a kid who was scared of thermonuclear warfare, I would think, like we're going to win. Like, we're going to win. Look at everybody gathered around this message. And I still feel like that. The song makes me want to cry. And everybody wants me to hate Michael Jackson, and I can't do it.
Wow, that's beautiful, Van. I say you're feeling down and you're feeling negative, that's the song you need to press play on. Because obviously, that's what gives you hope. That song is so powerful, it can fight and win wars. That's what you just said.
You're so, Rachel.
Oh,
you know what,
I'm a Michael Jackson lover, so I'm not being.
No, you're kidding
me. Any kind of way.
This is why you are not invited to me and Donnie's rap offs.
Like, well, no, me and Donnie, because I can't participate.
We're gonna do. Me and Donnie are gonna do more raps. Donnie, what's your other favorite rap song? Donnie,
I can only come in on the bridge and the chorus.
You knew Check Yourself though. I didn't
the chorus. The chorus.
Right. Donnie, what else do you like?
Some Snoop. Anything from the Snoop's first album, Doggy Style.
Anything. Doom, doom, doom. Come on, Donnie. With so much drama in the LBC.
It's kind of hard.
It's kind of hard.
That was the voice, Donnie. That was the voice.
Come on, Donnie. Come on. Come on, Donnie. Somehow, some way. Keep coming up.
You're coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day.
Oh! Can, may, I kick a little something for the G's and Snoop! A legend!
All right.
Six in the morning.
Rachel, we had stopped.
That counts.
Rachel came in like a private school kid trying to hang out with the bad kids. 6 in the morning.
Now what you want to do? That's all I got. That's all I got.
that counts. All right, guys, we got a big show. We got we're going to finally talk monkeypox. Which we promise you we would do. We finally have an expert to talk monkeypox with us, Dr. Sabrina Asumu from Boston University, is going to be on to talk about the lies and the truths about monkeypox. Maybe some truths that are hard to hear. Upsetting.
Mm.
And we're going to do that a little bit later. But we have to start with the big deal of the day, which is, of course, bim, 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 down Trump. Okay, Rachel.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Your father's tribe raided Mar-a-Lago. Did the judge go? Was he there?
He was with me in Dallas. He was not there. He is not FBI.
He might as well be. He's an extension.
He's not
of
the
FBI.
Feds. He's not the feds.
He is a federal absolutely judge. The feds. Yeah, what are you talking about?
I just don't want to say that.
Like, he is to. He is basically to, like, he is the DA. He's the, like, he's a judge. So
he would have issued a warrant. I mean, he would have signed off.
It would have been so hot if he'd have issued the fuck. That would have been the hottest shit. Like, who issued the warrant? Fucking Judge Lindsay. Judge Lindsay,
we'd
Earl,
we'd have to
right?
go
Earl
into Lindsay? Hiding. Is that what you're trying to say? My daddy looks like an Earl?
Looks like an Earl. What's his first name again?
Sam.
Oh, shit, Sam. He's more of a Sam than he is an Earl. It's tough. All right, Mar-a-Lago, this happened. So we're going to go backwards a little bit just because this happened the same day we were doing the podcast. And we're always thrilled when that happens, by the way. We're always thrilled when we do a full podcast and then 3 hours later, 4 hours later, or right before we go to sleep, something happens. That's mm-hmm. awesome for us. Because mm-hmm. that means it's stale by the time we get back on. And not only that, but there are 4 or 5 other things that have happened in relationships. So the FBI, would you call this a raid?
It was a raid.
It was a raid. The FBI raided Mar-a-Lago in search of classified documents that they had subpoenaed from the president, from the former president, that the former president had drug his feet in turning over. Everyone that's saying that this was a political witch hunt and they had no reason to go in, you're a dummy. They had a clear reason to go in. And the reality of the situation is if Donald Trump wanted to avoid being raided, he could have cooperated with the feds. Now, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to let the fact that they raided Mar-a-Lago turn me into a fan of the FBI. And I feel like that is kind of like a weird thing that's been happening. Have you been seeing that, Rachel?
What do you mean? What's a weird thing?
Like people are all like, go FBI, go. Yeah, go FBI,
well, isn't
go.
It possible to applaud an act without, you know, applauding the whole thing?
No. Not really.
No, because I can see people saying, you know, like, good for them for, you know what I mean, carrying out this, getting this warrant issued, going after these classified documents that should have been returned. I could say applaud that act. Like, kudos to Merrick Garland, which is interesting to me because I'm always like, would you have rather him on the bench or would you rather him in the position that he is right now as the attorney general? But I think you can say kudos to them for doing that without just saying, you know, congrats to every single thing that they do or applauding them for every single thing.
I mean,
they can both be true.
There's no doubt about the fact that you're right, but I'm in my feelings about it. I don't like them.
Okay.
Kill Dr. King.
You want to be difficult.
No, it's like, no, what do you mean?
All I want to say is, oh wait, that's the wrong song. It's just another, Donnie, play that every single time he gets negative.
Wow, that would actually work. No, I understand your point though. It's very well taken. but still though, don't root for the FBI. I'm just letting y'all know. Don't root for the FBI because they're going to fuck it up next week. This is what happens. We go, oh my God, we love you. You know what I mean? Oh, we love you, Justin Timberlake. And then he fucks over Janet. Like, nah, don't fucking do it. Don't do it the first time. All right. So this happens and there's fallout from this. There's fallout from both sides. The fallout we get from the left is, hey, why did it take so long to get this done? We know that Trump is some sort of master criminal and it took us a long time to get there. The fallout from the right is, of course, the talk of this being a political witch hunt. I watched a little bit of Fox News after, and like, God damn it, they should have charged admission. They literally, Fox should have been pay-per-view after this. You should have to pay. Fox News, after Trump's raid, was too good to be given away free. It was too good. I've never seen that much mascara running. Like, they were crying over this. Like,
no.
Some real, oh, they're on the news losing their shit. it was so fucking hilarious. Now, before we move on and talk about exactly what this all means, I do have a question. Are you at all worried about energizing the right in terms of the aftermath of this raid, that they will be even more vigilant, be even more fired up to fight now that this happened?
I am worried only if nothing comes about it. If the FBI or Merrick Garland has to come out and say they didn't find anything, then I'm worried. I am worried for the outcome to be, which is why, you know, Merrick Garland wants the warrant to be released to the public, because I think he's trying to be as forthcoming as possible to avoid the extremists who are going to talk no matter what, but maybe those people who aren't as extreme, to give them an excuse to say the FBI overstepped. I would think that if they were going to take this drastic of a move, because they have to be, the FBI has to be very sensitive when they're searching politicians, I believe that's what it says, then they have enough information to really believe that they are searching for something in particular and they know exactly where it is. That's what I believe. My only fear is if they have to say nothing was discovered, then that is fuel to the fire that they'll say it was a witch hunt.
Yeah, you're right. So here's the thing. I feel like I'm not going to go in detail about the bat. I mean, you guys all know that this raid, at the end of the day, was authorized by two people. One of them is obviously Merrick Garland. The second one is FBI Director Chris Wray, who was, of course, appointed by President Trump. You guys know this. This is less political than it has to do with the fact that the National Archives and Records Administration asked for certain documents after they felt like what they had received was incomplete, and President Trump refused to comply for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So they subpoenaed those documents, and they went in to get them. That is that. Okay. That's the reason why President Trump was searched and raided, however you want to put it. I will like to tell you something. I want to tell you something, Rachel.
Tell me.
The warrant in this, Merrick Garland spoke today and talked about the fact that he wants the warrant released. He's asking for a judge to uncover the warrant. The warrant could tell the story, but it might not. What definitely will tell the story, though, is the receipt. When someone comes into your house with a warrant looking for stuff, they look around for stuff, they give you the warrant, hey, it's the warrant, but they also give you a receipt. And the receipt tells you and everybody else what they found. I've talked to some people.
Okay.
I've done some talking. I've done some digging. And I'm not making any promises to anyone. But some of the people that I talked to believe that some pretty damning stuff was found down there.
Well, thank God.
And that the receipt will show that. And that in due time, all of that will come out. And that the reason why you haven't heard a lot of the major, huge voices in the Republican Party make too much of a stink about this is because behind the scenes, they're being told not to. Now, you're going to see the Marjorie Taylor Greens and I guess the lunatic fringe of the party do what they have to do no matter what. But there is a possibility that, you know, you haven't heard the big guns like the Mitch McConnells and the rest of these guys kind of get involved. You've seen some stuff, but not really about the actual raid in and of itself. A lot of these guys are holding it down, holding it down.
Interesting, because Kevin McCarthy has spoken out.
He's a small fry.
Well, that could turn in November.
He's a small fry.
He could easily become the majority leader.
He's a bitch. I'll tell him to his face.
Okay. And DeSantis, who obviously is extremely influential in the Republican Party as well, has spoken out. Interesting.
Well, look, let me tell you something about DeSantis. DeSantis better, like, he better be concentrating on his own shit. Because there's some people looking to come snake that nomination right up under him. DeSantis. So sick of all of these guys. All right. So that right there, we heard from Merrick Garland today. Merrick Garland was short but sweet. Basically, he was saying that this wasn't politically motivated. This had to do with a very straight up set of facts. Those facts led us to go down there and get what we felt like we had a right to retrieve from the president. It's like, I knew about it. The FBI director knew about it. I approved it. The White House had nothing to do with it. Biden and Kamala Harris said that, you know, they had nothing to do with it. Biden said that, yeah, you know, he's like, we didn't know anything about anything, which if you've been watching the president recently, you know that that's probably true. So he, come on, man. It's funny. He's cool, but he's getting up there. That's funny.
It's just another part of me.
Okay. Anyway. And I love the Republicans calling for the defunding. How can we get the Republicans?
Oh my gosh.
How can we get them to defund stuff? Like, what do we have to do? Because they're on our side now with the defund of the law
FBI.
Enforcement.
Yeah, they want to abolish the FBI. Like, what? I mean, obviously, you have to do is go after them. Then it becomes a problem. It's only a problem when it goes after them.
Did you see the guy that ran into the FBI agent, the FBI field office in Cincinnati today, armed? He had a nail gun and AR-15. The fuck is he doing with the nail gun?
Don't make me laugh at him.
I'm asking, like, what was it like?
I don't know what. It's almost like he picked it up by mistake. I don't know if he thought he grabbed something else.
I'm telling you, what be happening to these people is they be having these grandiose ideas. Like, he thought he was going to run into the FBI office and crucify a bunch of people. I swear. He thought he was, I'm telling you, he's like, he thought he was going to run into the FBI office and crucify some people. He brought a nail gun. And, you know,
probably
it's not funny. It's like, this political violence isn't funny, but all we can do such absurd times, man. Such absurd times.
Do you think that that's just the tip of the iceberg? So the day the FBI goes and raids Trump, somebody tries to go attack an FBI office in Cincinnati. They're already saying that on the web that people are talking in a way worse than they did for January 6th. Do you think that this is all leading to another type of, maybe it won't be an insurrection, but something? Do you think this is leading to this? Do you think this is inevitable? Inevitable now that we've seen this raid. Like, let's just say they did find damning stuff and your sources are correct. And so now we lead down this road with Trump. I mean, they feel like their leader is being attacked. Is this war at this point?
Yes. So I'm definitely fearful that there'll be more political violence. I think those are just the times that we live in now. But I look at this political violence in a different way than I think most other people look at it, right?
Okay.
I think most people are afraid of these sort of large-scale political disruptions that we saw on January 6th. And those could certainly happen, and it would be stupid to say that that won't happen again. What I am more concerned about is the actions of lone wolves and people who can engage into domestic terror in a very intimate and pointed way. So that guy that had that AR-15 and went and attacked that FBI field office, that's the scarier thing, right, to me, than anything like January 6th or any mass large-scale thing, because that guy doesn't have to – he can be stupid enough to go and stand in front of the FBI building and try to take on all the agents inside, or he could do something else a lot more sinister, and it's very difficult to track the craziness of one person doing one thing to one group, right? And because of that, you just don't know what's going through the minds of all of these people. As far as being scared of the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and all of that, not as concerned with that. I think those guys still want to maintain some sort of public face. They still want to in some way be seen as legitimate to someone, right? So full-scale violence from them is crossing a line that they probably can't come back from, because they like being Proud Boys. They like being Oath Keepers. But I do fear people from factions like that going off on their own, or maybe not so off on their own, but creating smaller, more deadly, more intimate sort of violence. And that's kind of the kind of thing that you see. When I see stuff like that, that's what I think. As far as people marching and all of that stuff, I mean, you can put that down either. You can use biological weapons. Just say they go crazy. They start dropping some gas. Everybody fucking get knocked down. But the reality of it is 35 million people represent President Trump's core base. And they range from mildly crazy to fucking off their rocker. And they think he's some kind of god. So, you know, and by the way, that's not me conjecturing that. He knows that. He said that they worship him and that he could kill somebody and they wouldn't care. He said that. And we've heard them say that God sent President Trump and all of this. The people that I'm talking about, it's non-controversial that they're fucking out of there. It seems like the walls are closing down around the former president. Are you sad?
Yeah, I'm really upset about it. What? Am I sad?
I want to get in one more topic before we get to Sabrina.
Okay.
Did you hear Irv Gotti on Drink Champs?
Yes, I did.
I heard. Let's listen to some comments. Oh. Shout out to Nori. DJ Effie, like let's hear some comments about some of the stuff that Irv Gotti, former head of Murder Inc., who signed Ashanti, who signed Ja Rule, Irv Gotti, a bona fide hip hop legend, very instrumental in the careers of Jay-Z, in the careers of Ja Rule, in the careers of DMX. Irv Gotti, an incredibly talented producer and hip hop cultural icon. Let's hear some of the stuff he had to say on Drink Champs. Donnie, give me some sound.
I can get past you wanting to be with Nelly.
Sounds like you didn't get past that. I'm just being honest.
Listen. At the time it happens, any man.
Yeah, of course.
Is her. Yeah, the chick you fucking are in love with is with this nigga.
Country grandma.
You wanna hear how I found out?
How you found out?
Country only grandma.
Only on Drink Chat. We saw the documentary too.
Yeah, so yeah. Tell me. How did you find out, sir?
I was at home.
Uh-huh. And there wasn't no Twitter or Instagram back then.
Was at home. Okay. Listen to this shit. This is God wanted me to find out. Was at home. NBA package. I like watching sports. Oh my God, what's this commotion going on in the stadium? Mm. We just found out what the commotion is. Nelly has walked in with Ashanti.
So, if you're Irv, do you still hold on to that after all of this time? What do you think, Rachel?
You do if you have a documentary to promote. And that's how I look at it. Why is he speaking on this for the first time in, what, 20 years? Because you have a documentary to promote. I'm slightly intrigued now. And I might not have been intrigued prior to this. I don't think that he's still holding on to any sort of feelings. I think that he is a businessman and he is promoting something that he's making money off of. And that's just the way I see it. Otherwise, we would have heard from him before this.
He has said slight things like this before.
Okay.
But I want to get into what he's saying now. Let's talk about the making of the Ashanti hit Happy. I want everybody to hear what Irv Gotti had to say about how this song was constructed. Donnie, give me the sound.
But was that kind of like, did that ever get involved with the business part of it? Like, you know, that you guys were most romantically involved. Did that ever, like, you know, trickle down to the business? Like,
it helped her.
Okay, I'm not following. It helped her that y'all was together?
I mean, Happy, big record, right?
Yeah,
I'm so happy. Uh-huh. Let me tell you how happy.
Yo, BT, you're gonna check for me, nigga.
Hey, this table feels like.
Hold on. Yeah.
So happy. Let me explain how the relationship and how it worked and how it worked to.
Yeah, I'm dating at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're together.
Matching watches. I imagine you bought her a watch too.
I bought her mad shit.
Okay.
Okay.
Birkins, all that. All right.
I bought. She gained.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I don't know about none of this. I just know.
Okay.
So
you Switzerland. Stay out of it.
I'm Switzerland. There you go. Yeah,
we just finished sleeping together or whatever.
Okay.
I'm taking a shower. I'm in the shower. You know, a nigga be creative after.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Shit, I didn't get comfortable for this story.
Real.
I ain't never heard of these stories. I didn't get comfortable. We got popcorn.
Listen.
I didn't bring popcorn.
I'm in the shower.
Shit, don't steal my shit. I'll
give you the quick story.
Uh-huh, cool.
You can see the full story
on a Murder, Inc. documentary.
On the Murder,
that's going to be premiere on BET.
That's premiere on BET. I think of the whole track in the shower. I get out the shower, I call my nigga Chink. I'm on the phone, Chink, yo.
Chink Santana.
We get to the studio. Chink. Chefs it up, the beat, everything.
Huh. He basically said he created Happy after he had just made a love with Ashanti. Are you offended by this as a woman? Do you think this is poor taste?
I think I'm offended that he's talking about her like she's a piece of property. I'm offended that he's acting like he created and made Ashanti as if Ashanti doesn't possess any talent or star appeal on her own. And that without him and their relationship, she wouldn't be what she is today. Cause he alludes to that more so in the interview as well, just past this this clip. That's what I have a problem with. You know, I don't necessarily have a problem with him saying, you know, like the idea came after we had an intimate moment, because it's not a secret that they had a relationship, right? But I don't like, but to me, he's speaking of her like property. And that's what I have a problem with.
Do you think that Irv Gotti owes Ashanti an apology? Because Fat Joe said, Donnie, give me Fast Joe. Give me Fat Joe sound.
Irv Gotti, whoever the fuck you want, right? Ashanti, right? And so, whatever Irv has with Ashanti is 20 years old, right? And so I know he was making some points that mean a lot to him, his heart and soul. But when you keep ranting about somebody 20 years later, it felt like he's not over the young lady, right? And so also we didn't know that they was fucking, right? Because the whole time, I'm there. What's Love? Big Pun Record, on tour. I never seen them together like that. Now, I'm not saying they wasn't. They was. Or there was rumors they was. I never seen it. But I don't need to know. I don't need to know.
Do you think that Fat Joe, do you think that Irv Gotti owes Ashanti an apology?
Is Ashanti a part of the documentary, and does she speak on it? And has she ever spoken on it?
She is not, from my understanding, a part of the documentary.
See, and there's got to be a reason. So, absolutely. I don't feel like, unless they both publicly talked about their relationship in those details, then speaking of her in this way and not, you know, talking with her first, or maybe y'all have some type of issue, especially if she's not a part of this documentary, which it appears to be, and then you're just going to speak on her in this way. I don't believe in talking about private details without the other person being aware of it, or y'all agreeing to put your information out there in such a public way. Because obviously this, I mean, Fat Joe just said he was right there and had no idea they had a relationship. So I guess he hasn't talked about it before. So to me, it seems disrespectful, especially if you're not even going to give her the head up, knowing this is going to gain a lot of traction, because for myself, this is the first time that I heard about it. Absolutely owed her a phone call before he even said anything. Owed her the respect of saying something before, but now that it's out there, he definitely owes her an apology.
What was the song that Fat Joe and Ashanti had together? What's Love?
What's Love? Yeah, What's Love?
That song always bothered me.
Why? Ja Rule's part?
No, at the end, Ashanti says, like, it's like Ashanti talks about how much she wants Fat Joe to fuck her. Do you remember that part of the song?
Do not.
Am I wrong about this, Donnie? Do you remember this?
Is it where she says, come on, put it on me? On me? That part? I don't remember what you're talking about. I'm listening to it right now.
I'm telling you, I feel like there's a part at the end where she talks about Well, she told. Hold on. Let me see. Hold on. It's like the breakdown. Oh no. Yeah. Here it is. Look. Here it is. That's not what she says. She says, when I look in your eyes, there's no stopping me. I want the Don Joy crack on top of me. Don't want your stacks. Just break my back. Gonna cut you no slack because I'm on it like that.
We would have never known she sang it in such a beautiful way.
I know. It's just like, I'm just thinking, I was so toxic that age. I'd be like, damn, she want Fat Joe to fuck her like that.
Some people
for
like
the song.
For the song.
There's no hating on Fat Joe. You know how many women Fat Joe had. I was just thinking about what was it like be like to be Ashanti and to be in the booth. Cause like I had this friend named Regina and she could really sing. And this local Baton Rouge rapper had brought Regina in for a session. And the song was about his big black dick or something like that. And I remember she came back and said she was mad and uncomfortable because she had to sing, I want your big black dick in my booty, your big black dick in my booty. And I remember she was like, she felt really bad. Ebony can tell you. Ebony remembers it's like she
Donnie,
was like,
try to find
such
that
a big
song on
dick.
YouTube. Try to find
I think that. I think the song, no. And she had to sing that. She was very upset.
If the Thought Warriors can find that commercial that used to terrify you with the milk carton, they might be able to find this. Listen, my biggest problem with this whole thing is it discredits Ashanti's talent. And there will be people who will question whether or not Ashanti would have made it if she hadn't had a relationship with the boss. And that's what I don't like about it. Because Ashanti is a star. I love Ashanti.
I love her too. She's great. I like Irv Gotti. I like everybody involved. I like Ashanti. I like Irv. I like Fat Joe. You know, I like everyone's cool to me. It's fine. I don't know anybody not to like them. Everybody's cool to me. They had their moments. I just think, you know, come on, Irv. We got to have a little bit more care with the way
you cannot like what he said. And I don't like what he said. It was distasteful.
I don't like what he said at all. Okay. We're now going to talk about monkeypox. You can call it monkeypox if you want. I'm not going to make fun of the way that you talk, but we're going to call it monkeypox for the purposes of our podcast, I think. Or maybe Rachel could call it monkeypox if she wanted to call them that. So language is a tool. However you say it is however you say it. Okay. Sabrina Asumu is going to join us now to talk a little monkeypox. We're going to be back on the other side. Check it out. You guys... Unfortunately, there is a new infectious disease on the block. We thought that we had, you know, these infectious diseases corralled. Actually, I don't know if we did because COVID's kind of going nuts right now, too. But you've heard it. You've seen it on the news. You've seen it on the Shade Room. You've seen people displaying their skin after they've had a bout with the latest and greatest horrible and terrible affliction on the market. Monkeypox. We have not talked about monkeypox at all on Higher Learning, but today we will. We have somebody who knows what she's talking about. She is an endowed professor of medicine at Boston University, BU. Wow, look at that. An infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center. Her name is Sabrina Asumu, medical doctor. She is with us today on Higher Learning. How are you doing, sister?
I'm doing well. Thank you for getting my last name right. This is excellent.
Boom! That's what we do.
Might that be the last be good thing we the, say. Is that what
the
you're
last
say?
Thing we get right when it comes talking about monkeypox. So, I tweeted after seeing this young lady on the Shade Room, who said she got monkeypox from handling money at the racetrack where she works in Marietta, Georgia. I immediately went to Twitter and I said, I have to have the monkeypox vaccine immediately. I need it. I can't go through this. Okay. Two questions for you, Sabrina. Number one, how easy is it to get monkeypox? And number two, what are the real facts about the disease that you feel like are going underreported in the mainstream media?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on. This is really an honor and a pleasure to be here. And my job is always to try to convey accurate information. So this is really a nice opportunity. So number one, what it is that we need to know. So let's take that case that you were just talking about, handling money at a racetrack. That is an unlikely way to get monkeypox. And we'll talk about how you get it. So how is it that you're more likely to get monkeypox? You need close skin to skin contact. That's actually the most common way that people have been getting monkeypox these days. A second way you can get it is by handling, let's say, certain objects such as bed sheets that have been used by someone who's had monkeypox, but not like a brief encounter with like either handling money or touching a doorknob or an elevator button. Those are not like the ways that you would get monkeypox. The third way, which is not as likely, is having prolonged exposure to someone and getting it through respiratory secretions. So, me as an infectious disease physician, I am not as worried that you will get monkeypox through an airborne or through the air as I am more worried about for COVID-19. So, in summary, the way that you're more likely to get monkeypox is through close skin-to-skin contact. And what it is that we're seeing right now, in terms of really conveying things that may not be as clearly described in the general media, is that we're seeing it, and especially gay and bisexual, gay and bisexual individuals. Or other men who have sex with men and sexual networks. So that's sort of the predominant way the predominant group of people that we're seeing who are getting monkeypox. And the other data is that unfortunately, like with a lot of infectious diseases, it tends to disproportionately impact Black and Latino individuals in this country. So I'm really glad that I'm out here to be able to share some of this information.
Can I have one follow-up, Rachel? One.
Sure.
Sabrina, did you just tell me that monkeypox is airborne? I didn't know that.
No, it is so. Let me just clarify. This is really important. It's a rare way that you can get it through respiratory secretions, but it's not, it's been reported in the literature as being maybe in certain circumstances being transmitted through the air, but that's not the way that you can get monkeypox. So let me just say that again. The way that you can get monkeypox and how a lot of people are getting it through either through this current wave that we're seeing is through skin to skin contact. Okay?
I'm gonna
Contact with the lesions.
I'll follow up on that on that because I think what a lot of people fear, and which is why you saw Van's eyes buck and he, like wanted a follow-up question, is because we have no choice but to compare it to coronavirus. Not that they're the same, but just because we just went through that. And initially, when we learned about coronavirus, we were told to do one thing. And then as we were learning about the disease, we were, or the virus, we were learning that we should do something else. And so I think there's this fear of, is that same thing going to happen with monkeypox? Should I be wearing gloves? Should I be wearing a mask? If you could answer that.
That's, this is a great question. The reason why I love this question is because you're underscoring what are some of the issues that we dealt with COVID-19. And that's different for me from an infectious disease standpoint. That is very different from monkeypox. SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, was brand new. Like we were discovering and learning as we go. And I know that for the general public, this was very frustrating because one day we tell you, worry about your groceries. Everybody was wiping on their groceries. And it's more, we're like, forget about the groceries, worry about the air. So, and I'm sorry that this was sort of confusing. It's just that we're learning more and more information. And the predominant way that you get COVID-19 is through the air. It's airborne. And that's why we recommend that people wear a mask. Now, in terms of monkeypox, the thing that's so different between the two viruses is that monkeypox is not new. Like no one had ever heard of like SARS-CoV-2 until it arrived, right? It's never been seen before. Monkeypox is that new. So monkeypox is actually what we call endemic in Africa, meaning people have been getting monkeypox for a while. It was initially well described like in the 70s. And the key difference between monkeypox and what we've been going through with SARS-CoV-2 is that when SARS-CoV-2 came, we had no vaccines, we had no treatments, we didn't really know how you catch it. So we were discovering, and unfortunately, the messages changed. Monkeypox, we've known it for decades. We even have, so this is what's amazing to me as an infectious disease doctor, is that number one, we have a lot of information about how it's transmitted. And that's why I want to go ahead and say, close contact, skin to skin contact. That's how you're going to get monkeypox. We also have vaccines. Can you believe this? Like, as soon as we're learning about this new increase in monkeypox, we actually have vaccines. And then the third thing is we actually have also treatments. So there are some limitations in how much of these treatments and vaccines we actually have. But we actually, you know, when I first heard about it, I wasn't as nervous as I was for SARS-CoV-2 because there's a lot that we know. So that's what's reassuring.
Well, I'm nervous, Sabrina. I would like not to itch for 2 weeks. All right. It looked very itchy. And it listen at Rachel. That's one of the initial signs. Okay. It's flu-like symptoms. Listen
would you
to
let
Rachel.
The doctor say that and not okay. you?
Dr. Sabrina. This is where I'd like to jump in so that I clarify. So what are the symptoms? This is really key, right?
There you go. That's what I
should be looking out for. So it's a virus. And so often, you know, fevers, feeling fatigue or tired, right? And then and having swollen lymph nodes, right? That's another thing. And then the distinctive rash, right? Those pus-filled like lesions and skin rash that you've probably seen, you know, either on the internet and other places. So it's one thing that's really striking to me is that because the infection is so visible, right? People are really scared because it's not like, you know, COVID or the virus SARS-CoV-2, you can get it. Some people don't even know they have it, right? Like versus monkeypox with those scary lesions. So that's really, you know, and that are very, I mean, you hear the descriptions, people, they're very, showing me your temperature.
Yeah.
and those lesions are really painful. I mean, those, the poor people who've gotten this so far,
yeah.
They describe these really, really painful lesions. And unfortunately, you know, when you get it, you may need to sort of isolate until the lesions are scabbed over. So you know, it's very visible and it's very scary when you see something like that, especially
at a time
when we're already still dealing with COVID-19 and another pandemic. So I hear you, but that's why I'm here, to sort of answer questions and provide like accurate information so people can feel a little more well-educated and know what they need to do.
Now, mention treatments. You mentioned vaccines. Should we be getting the vaccine? Because I've seen the reports that it's limited. Should we be going out there and getting it now? Because I'm seeing that, you know, by day, the numbers are increasing. And I read somewhere that we were approaching an exponential curve. So should we be finding our local, you know, urgent care, whatever, to go get one?
So one key important thing is, who are the people who should be getting their, you know, monkeypox vaccine right now? So as I described to you before, in terms of people who are seem to be disproportionately impacted right now are gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men. So if you fall in that category and you are also the other, not just being in that risk factor, but also having multiple sexual partners or being exposed to monkeypox, those are the people who should be looking for a vaccine right now, and that we're really encouraging and trying to make it accessible. So if you do fall in that category, so I'm going to say it again, gay, bisexual, or other men who have sex with men with multiple sexual partners over the past 14 days, or if you've been exposed to someone with monkeypox and you are also from that category, these are the people who should be seeking vaccine. So let's take another example. If you are a healthy 18-year-old and you don't fall in that category, right? You're like an 18-year-old young woman who doesn't fall in that category, you're healthy, you're not the person who should be getting the vaccine right now. And the reason why is, you know, it's not the group that we're seeing disproportionately impacted, number one. And number two, as you said, you know, we don't have enough vaccine for everyone, and we want to save it for people who are more at risk so that we can prevent further infections and what we're seeing in sexual networks, right? Uh-huh. So that this virus doesn't become something that we have to deal with all the time.
So the narrative behind monkeypox is very important right now, because what happens in society is medical information or medical stats, warnings, whatever, they become weaponized by kooks, by idiots, and by jerks on the internet, used to make the lives of marginalized groups, already marginalized groups, even harder. And you say that right now the disease is, or the monkeypox, should I say, is much more prevalent in the for the gay men that we share our communities with. People take that and say that monkeypox is a gay disease. After we hear that stuff coming from our medical professionals, we hear that information coming from our medical professionals. As I understand it, monkeypox is not a gay disease, but I'll ask you, is monkeypox a gay disease?
So first of all, I'm glad you're asking that question, because it is so important that we do not stigmatize any group, right? So let me just first start by saying anyone can get monkeypox, even if you're not gay. Anyone can get monkeypox. But what is important to convey is that right now we're seeing more people who are gay, bisexual, or other men who have sex with men who are getting this infection right now, right? And so it is important that we get the message out so that they get the care that they need, right? And are able to stay healthy. But it is really, really important that we do not stigmatize, right? And that we also emphasize that pretty much anyone can get monkeypox. It's just that right now with the rise in cases that we're seeing, it seems to be transmitting through sexual networks. So the other thing that's really key for me to emphasize is that me as a physician and a public health official, what I want to do is I want to describe what I'm seeing. Objective data. What is the CDC data? So what are we seeing? Because what we want to do is allocate our resources where they're most needed. I want to be out here to say, okay, what are the risk factors? And also, as I said before, we're seeing that Black and Latino individuals who seem to be disproportionately impacted. And actually, I just saw some numbers from Atlanta, Georgia that I found really scary yesterday that I learned about.
Super scary. Oh, my God.
Yeah, let me just tell them, for everybody else who hasn't seen it, 80% of the cases that have been identified in Georgia. So let me describe this. This is Georgia data, the whole state. 80% identify as Black.
Black, yeah, 80% of the people are Black. It's crazy.
And the other number that's really not, that's why I want to share the information, is that when you look at who's getting vaccinated, only approximately 20% of people who are vaccinated are identified as Black. So this is why it's so important to get the information, right? Objective data, so that we can get the word out and also allocate our resources. They're supposed to be the ones who should be tested. They're the ones who should be vaccinated right now so that we can address the infection in that particular group.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. Is it currently contained? And either way, however you answer that, why has there been such a slow response to this? At least it appears that way.
Yeah, no, at this point, you're right. It's been, so first of all, we're at a point where, you know, cases seem to be increasing, right? Like we're at 10,000 was the last number that I saw. So cases are increasing, and we're at a point where, you know, whether or not this is going to be controlled is going to depend on how well we execute our approach right now, how good we are at testing and identifying people, how well we are at vaccinating people. So I'm not going to lie by say, you know, as an infectious disease physician, when I look at the numbers, I am, you know, I'm concerned. And I think it's really important that we use all the tools that we have to really get this under better control. And so what was the second part? So is it, what's the second part of your question is, why
has there, yeah, the response.
Yeah. You know, it's the same issue that we sort of, a little bit of the same issues of why, you know, we've been struggling even with COVID-19 is that our public health infrastructure has been underfunded for so long. And so, like, you know, you put us in a place where, you know, we've been suffering with COVID-19 and really focusing on that for many years. And then now we get like another infection that's a public health emergency. So first of all, resources. And then initially, you know, we didn't have enough because of testing available, right? Because there were certain hurdles with being able to be tested. But now this isn't it. But testing has really been improved. You don't have to go through the CDC or state labs. We actually have these commercial labs that are actually helping with identifying. So first of all, testing was an issue in the beginning, which the CDC has really addressed and really increased the number of testing that we're able to do. And then second is like, you know, although we have a vaccine, we didn't really have enough available right on hand. So it's not like we could vaccinate everybody and who was at high risk to be able to sort of tamp things down. So really it's just that a lot of the public health infrastructure has not been as funded as it should be. And then there were some hurdles related to testing and vaccination that has really hampered, but we're really moving. And number one, an important development this week was the declaration of a public health emergency, which was really good because what it does is it really helps the federal government use all the tools that they have available so that we can really, really address this increase in cases.
Last question from me. I was going to ask you about how you guys feel about besmirching the reputation of our dear monkeys, our dear primates all over the world who have to bear the stigma of being linked to this disease. You know, I was a kid, Sabrina, and I asked my mother, why chicken pox? I like chicken. The chickens, they have nothing to do with this, man. And even if they did, it was an accident. I have a disease next. Say it should be like, I don't know, Republican pox or something, whatever. But how bad can monkeypox get? Like if we don't contain monkeypox, we lived in a situation where we all got COVID. Like I had it, she had it, Kalika had it. We everybody got it, right? Everybody seems to, I know very few people at this point who haven't had COVID. How bad can monkeypox get?
Yeah, no, all excellent questions. So first of all, yes, there's a movement, first of all, to try to rename it because of the stigma that's associated with it. But also it's a misnomer. It's not really, it was discovered, like identified and isolated monkeys, but actually it's rodents.
Oh,
they're the ones who are more likely to, like, you know, give you monkeypox, which the poor monkeys are now like the ones who are being blamed for this. But it's more like,
bubbles.
There were cases in the U.S. a few years ago that were actually with like prairie dogs, like rodents are the ones who are more likely to be responsible for this. So number one, I want to acknowledge that there's a movement to try to change the name so that it's more accurate to what's actually going on and also take away any associations. Number two, how bad can it get? So, you know, what was so concerning and has been really, really hard with the SARS-CoV-2 like pandemic and COVID-19 like pandemic is that it was a predominantly like respiratory infection, and it's airborne. It's in the air. Like, we all share this airspace, and it's just really, really, when you talk to some of the people who have been putting all these preparedness for, like, you know, many, many years trying to, like, you know, estimate what's going to happen in the future and try to come up with plans of how we deal with things, the scariest thing for them was a respiratory virus that was going to cause all this trouble. And so, as we, you know, this respiratory virus, SARS-CoV-2, is what's been causing all these issues. And as I've emphasized a lot, monkeypox is predominantly spread through close skin-to-skin contact. So me as an ID doc, that's very much easier to handle than something that's in the air, right? You really need that skin-to-skin contact. So that's number one. In terms of how bad it could get, you know, until recently, they actually had not been any deaths in the new places that were identifying monkeypox, like outside of Africa. And there were a few deaths that have been reported around the world that are not related to Africa. And in terms of, but most people, you know, get the infection and they have the lesions that are really, really painful, but they recover and end up doing fine. Except for some people, in terms of what the death so far, when you look at what's happened and why people died, it was you can get what we call encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain, but it's very rare when you compare it to like how people usually do. So it can be deadly, but it's not as deadly as like SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19.
Dr. Asumu, I don't have another question. I just want to apologize for Van's asinine question about the monkeys. You have to know that on this podcast, there is a movement going on. Then there's only one person in it, and that's Van. And it's all about the animals. So animals. I knew that question was coming. And I feel so bad that we had to waste her time on that question.
Animals don't do anything wrong. We should name the bad stuff after the people. Okay. We should call the disease like R. Kelly pox or something like that. Something really bad. That's all I'm saying. We appreciate you. I was afraid of yes, monkeypox. I was afraid. Like, seriously. I went to the NABGA conference in Vegas last week. I came back and I boxed. And I guess whatever was going on with my sweat bag that I wear when I box irritated my skin a little bit. And on the way home, you could not tell me that I did not have a monkeypox. I'm like going home. I'm looking. I'm like, yo, is that a pox? Am I poxy? But now that I've talked to you, I am so much more informed about the disease. And hopefully everyone will be responsible and our government will be responsible and we can figure it out. But we will if we listen to people like you, Sabrina. So thank you for joining us today on Higher Learning.
Thank you for the invitation and really a joy and a pleasure to join you and sharing information, factual information. That's what we need to do. Share facts so that people can feel more at ease.
Absolutely. Thank you Absolutely. So much, sister.
Thank you.
Are you more or less scared of monkeypox?
I would say I'm less.
Less?
I was about to buy gloves, start touching mm-hmm. everything. I mean, I sanitize my hands for everything, but I'm more at ease knowing the way it's transmitted, and I really like her breaking down. I know it's a totally different disease from the coronavirus, but just hearing that, no, this has been around, we know how it's transmitted, that makes me more confident. So I'm not going to be necessarily totally relaxed, but I feel a bit more at ease than I did before.
Yeah, she also basically told us that I shouldn't be trying to seek the vaccine. She said, I'm taking up too much vaccine.
Yeah, for people who are more at higher risk. I don't think I still want to shake people's hands, though. I'm cool on that.
You don't want to shake people's hands? But even what about like a fist bump? Because fist bump, you could get pox.
That's touching. Yeah, I don't think we have to do all that. Let's just pox. Smile at each other.
Rachel, what's that on your cheek? Is that a pox?
Don't play with me.
Rachel, you should look. Is that a pox? It could be poxy. I'm not going to do that because you know what happened? You know what happened? I'll fuck around like that and then I'll fucking get the pox because I'll be boxing this stuff. I'll be putting that jab on niggas now to keep them off.
I almost asked her about this but I didn't want to like give you anxiety. I was going to say Van goes to the gym a lot. Is that something he, because she was naming places like the sauna, the pool, or maybe that's something I read about places you shouldn't be when it comes to because of monkeypox. And I was going to ask about the gym, but I didn't want to freak you out. But maybe you hit up Dr. Sabrina on the side and ask her that about putting on gloves. Maybe you need to bring your own gloves.
You like 21 Savage?
I really do.
I like him too. I have 4, 5, 6 M's in my bank account. Remember when Tommy Lauren? Remember Tommy Lauren? You remember when Tommy Lauren did the bank account video? You don't remember that? Donnie.
No.
Do you remember when Tommy? No. Do you remember when Tommy Lauren made
no,
all
I don't.
The white man's niggas on?
I don't.
Y'all don't remember when Tommy Lauren taped herself singing What do y'all be at? Y'all don't remember when Tommy Lauren taped herself singing the 21 Savage and all of the Soto white men's nigga black guys were like, oh my gosh, she's so hot. Remember that? Look at the video. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, she looks so great and she sings our song, so she must be down. Tommy be fucking with black guys though.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does.
Who?
Well, there's some people I could talk about and then some that I can't, but I think she's fucking with a black guy pretty publicly right now. Yeah, she absolutely does. Anyway.
Who? Uncle Ruckus? Whatever.
Uncle Ruckus. So, 21 Savage, aside from Tommy Lauren, tweeted that he would like to see people put down the guns in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It's a great message. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, Atlanta, put the fucking guns down. It's too much fucking shooting going on and popping people like balloons in Atlanta. It's very upsetting. What a great city. But there's a lot of different types of shit happening all over the country. And of course, people gave him the fucking business because they said, 21 Savage, who are you to tell people to put their guns down? You, head of the Slaughter Gang. And someone who's rapped about these different things for a long time. Savage responded. Here it is.
When I say something about how I really feel about Atlanta, like where I'm from, it's like a lot of gun violence. It's a lot of killings and shootings going on. And I ain't never seen nothing like this. Like my whole life being in Atlanta, I ain't never seen it at this point that it's at right now. Like babies getting killed. And it's just, that's just sad. It makes me depressed. But when I speak up on that, they say, oh, you a hypocrite. You this, you that, you. I ain't never promoted violence. I just rap about what I've been through, or what I've heard about, what I've saw. That ain't me promoting violence. That's not me saying, yeah, violence is cool or whatever. Yeah, I say a lot on songs that it's catchy, people like it.
Okay, your thoughts?
I agree with everything 21 Savage had to say. I really like 21 Savage, so I'm very biased, but I think he did. First of all, we get on to people who have platforms who don't use them to speak out against things that are detrimental and hurting our community. So here is a man who is extremely popular in the culture, is seeing something happening in the very community that he grew up in. And he's saying, I've seen it in a way I never have before. And I'm upset and I don't like it and I'm tired of it and we have to stop. And there are plenty of people who listen to his music who might be committing this type of violence who this could trickle down to. I say kudos to him for doing that.
Absolutely.
And for people who want to call him out, I think he gave a great explanation of saying, listen, I'm rapping about the things that I see. I'm not saying, hey, go out and do these things. So it's just, it frustrates me because people, like, they want it both ways, right? You want to call somebody out for not saying something. And then when they do say something, you want to call them out for that. Nothing wrong was done here. And I'm glad that he spoke out about it. I'm glad that he didn't just let people talk on social media. I'm glad he had something to say.
I agree.
I'm a stan.
First of all, I don't know what you niggas want. And y'all know who I'm talking to. Y'all get on people when they are doing wrong. You get on people when they're doing right. I think you just want people to be who you want them to be. I think that people want people in these little sections. And they don't ever want people to leave their sections. So if 21 Savage was a piece of shit gangster rapper to you in 2015, then you want him to be a piece of shit gangster rapper in 2020, in 2021, in 2022. Obviously, that must be it. Because the moment he says, hey, put the guns down, then you say, hey, weren't you the one to tell us to pick the guns up? The answer is, sure I was. I'm serious. The answer is, sure I was the one telling you to pick the guns up, without a doubt. I was telling you to pick the guns up. But now I'm saying, guess what? This shit is a little bit going too far. So put them down. And if he wants to be a part of the chorus that is saying to do that, I think that the change in the growth should actually be applauded, as long as that change and that growth is actually followed up with works, actions, and consistency. Let me tell you where I do disagree with 21 Savage is that he definitely glorifies violence. Like, okay. For sure.
I was about to ask like, you.
We have to be real. Like, it's one thing to talk about the violence that you've seen, right? Nas has a lyric that says, I'm not going to be able to remember it. He says, like, he stepped over crackheads and dead people when he was walking out of his project building, right? He's talking about the violence that he sees and the drug addiction that he sees, right? That is a different lyric, totally, than saying, I sell more weight than fucking Fidel Castro or not Fidel Castro. I sell more weight than Noriega and I kill more niggas than cancer. The second one is bragging about it. The first one is talking about what it is that you saw. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that Nas has never glorified stuff. Everybody's glorified all kinds of things. I've glorified fucking OnlyFans on this podcast. I'm better than no one. But what I'm saying is, for 21 Savage, I listen to the guy all the time. We'll kill you. We'll knock your head off your shoulders. We'll shoot you in your fucking face. All of that stuff is both a glorification of it and a perverse sort of call and ask for safety. Because all of those things mean, like, I feel unsafe. Like, when you're willing to tell somebody how bad you'll fuck them up, the reason why you're telling them that, it's like Jaws is shark fin. What you're trying to say is, hey, I'm here, and if you fuck with me, I'll kill you. I get it, but over a beat, you're boasting about it. You're talking about how hard you are. You're talking about how hard your crew is. You're talking about how many guns you have. You're talking about all of that stuff. It doesn't make you a demon, but the reality is, there is some glorification in that, of course. So the real test for 21 Savage or anybody else who feels like 21 Savage feels is whether or not they'll be willing to not glorify things. Because for right now, I do not agree with him that he doesn't glorify violence. I'm not coming down on him. I'm just intellectually saying that there's some glorification going on. So if he really wants people to put the guns down, then he will probably have to put the guns down in his music as well. That's all I'm saying.
How recent is that lyric that you just said?
Look, man, I've been listening to 21 Savage for a long time. I haven't heard the Kumbaya motherfucker yet. Okay? There might be another reason.
Like, bank account. I don't know. That's a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I said that was a while ago. But I will tell you this. There might be another reason why you see some of these Atlanta rappers turn over a new leaf. You might hear all kinds of stuff from all of them. You might see them working with the Boys and Girls Club. You might see them doing all kinds of stuff, hosting swimming clubs. They don't want to get that Rico. They don't want to get that Rico. They don't want to get that Rico. Yo, like, you hear 21 Savage is on the track.
About to use my lyrics against me.
It's like, it's Fred Hammond featuring 21 Savage. 21 Savage and Marvin Sapp. The Trap God album, you're going to see a lot of this stuff because they're not trying to catch that Rico. That woman in Atlanta is going nuts with these Ricos. That's so, as a matter of fact.
No weapon formed against me shall prosper will be the remix. It'll be the remix.
21 Savage. Jesus, honey. Metro Boomin wants some more. Fred Hammond. Oh, look, Donnie, I want you to make a drop for me. Like, anytime there's a Rico, I want to hear Rico.
Rico.
From Rico Suave. Yeah. Okay. I want, like, anytime we talk about Rico, every time one of these guys incriminates themselves and their whole crew, I just want to hear
Rico.
So funny.
Big news in the sports world. Where do you put Serena Williams in all-time athletes? Where do you put her?
Oh, my gosh. It's hard for me to do all of that. But for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to put her in number one.
She's the greatest athlete of all time?
Yes. Because the things that she's been able to accomplish, being Black and being a woman and coming up in a community where you didn't see people that look like her do the sport that she's doing, I feel like she's had to overcome so many different obstacles that a Tom Brady maybe necessarily didn't have to. Whoever you're going to name as your number one.
I'm just asking you.
Serena Williams had to overcome even more. I don't like to do ratings, but for the sake of her retiring in this conversation, I'm going to put her as number one because I don't even want to say who's a 2-3. I'm just going to put her as number one. Just number one. Just number one. Van? Number one.
She's up there, man. I'm not saying she's... It has nothing to do...
Because if you ask me to say then who's 1-2... If I say she's top five, okay, I can say she's top five. And I don't even want to name who's one, two, three, or four.
She's definitely... By the way, Serena Williams... definitely has a case to be the best athlete of all time. But is it because, by the way, sisters don't get mad. Is it because she's black and a woman, though?
No.
Is it
because, I mean, like, it, how many, is that I don't even have her stats in front of me.
Let's look at her stats.
But, like, all the grand slams that she's won, and, but yeah. You have to, but just, she was never supposed to be statistically in the place that she's in. So not only does she just achieve it, period. Right? Take away her being black. Take away her being a woman. She just achieved things that had never been done. Then you add to it all that was against her that she had to physically and mentally overcome to get there. That is the definition of an athlete. And then the fact that she's stepping away from the sport. She's not saying she can't keep going. She's saying there are other great things that I want to accomplish, like the venture firm that she started, like being a mother, like passing things down and helping people out off the court in a way that only she can. And so to me, that makes her, I'm putting all of this together to make her such an amazing athlete. Like as a, to put a Tom Brady, and obviously Tom Brady is great, but he's also a white man, right? In our social caste system, the most powerful being that there is. She's a black woman. But again, if you take away that, she still accomplished amazing things that would make her a top five athlete.
Okay. She's definitely top five. And she's not five. She's not. Look, Serena Williams has an ironclad case to be. It's Michael Jordan. It's Tom Brady. It's Serena Williams. I mean, baseball's a little bit more convoluted because some of the guys are on steroids, some of the guys weren't, and some people would go, oh, but I put Barry Bonds up there. All kinds of athletes. So Usain Bolt, I put up there. Simone Biles, I put up there. All of these people who are super duper dominant in their sports. When we talk about American sports, I think the competition is probably going to be, because I'm not going to count hockey as an American sport, even though I guess you should, right? The competition is going to be, hockey is definitely an American sport. The competition is going to be Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, I guess Wayne Gretzky. And really, you know, outside of the Olympic sports, that's who you're going to be talking about. If this is your top five, if it's Serena Williams, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, and Wayne Gretzky. If it's those five, you have Serena one, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You have who's second?
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan second. Who third?
Wait, Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods third. Okay. And then I'm so assuming fourth is going Brady. To be Tom Brady, and then fifth is going to be Wayne Gretzky. So that's going to be
I don't really know that much.
You don't really know that much, right?
You miss 100% of the goals, whatever that famous quote is that he has.
So, and you're saying the fact that Serena Williams is a black woman is what makes her number one.
She was never supposed to be dominant in her sport. She wasn't. Tiger, you could almost make that argument for as well, but like
it's not that you couldn't almost make that argument. you could make the same argument
for Tiger. You could make that argument as well,
right?
But for Michael Jordan, black man being great at basketball, Tom Brady, a white man being a great quarterback. I'm just saying, Serena, you know what I'm saying, Serena. I'm not discrediting what they have done and what they've accomplished, but Serena Williams was never supposed to dominate the sport of tennis. Uh-huh. Everything was against her. So she had to not only overcome things with a physical talent, she had to do things mentally based on black woman and her socioeconomic status. To me, She is so inspiring. And did one wrong thing and she was hyper criticized for anything that she did. If she had an attitude, if she wore her hair a certain way, if she wore her outfit for a certain way, her body structure, everything that she did was criticized. Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, and definitely not Wayne Gretzky had to overcome those same things. So to me, the doors that she knocked down and what she has, I don't even play tennis, and she's inspired me. That is the effect, the Serena Williams effect. And nobody else can do that. Nobody else can say that. Sorry.
Number one, all-time rankings. The Grand Slam titles, the career titles are just nuts. The career titles are just nuts. She wasn't able to capture the all-time record. Doesn't look like she'll be able to capture it. I don't think she needs it. Obviously, an Olympic gold medalist. Was able to capture the Serena Slam. She is. These are the Grand Slam singles results for Serena Williams. Australian Open champion. 2003, 2005, 2007, 2009, 2010, 2015, 2017. French Open champion. 2002, 2013, 2015. Wimbledon. 2002, 2003, 2009, 2010, 2012, 2015, 2016. US Open. 1999, 2002, 2008, 2012, 2013, and 2014. It's just nuts. It's nuts to have that much career success over that long of a time and change and redefine her sport in that way. I think that you make an amazing case. I think that Michael Jordan's the greatest athlete of all time. You make an amazing case. I think that it's one thing to say a black man could be good at basketball. It's another thing to say that a black man is going to be the number one personality in all of the world, which is what Michael Jordan was able to accomplish.
And he changed the game. A great argument to be made. Again, you make a great argument as well.
Yeah.
Tiger, Jordan, Serena, it's tough.
Right.
But you said, what were you going to say?
But Tom Brady's just nowhere in there for you.
He's seven Super Bowls over 20 years. Okay, we're talking about there are a lot of great athletes, but you were going to say something. You said at first when I said it, what?
At first when you said it, I was just like, when you said, because I got to like pull my misogyny off too, right? I got to pull my misogyny off too, because like right now it's like, oh, I'm nice, but then I pull down this mask. It's like, I hate women. Yeah. So I got to pull my misogyny off as well, right? So at first when you said, I think she's the best because she's a black woman, any sports fan that's gonna be like, okay, well, it's gotta be more than that, right? Because we're talking about sports.
And there is.
And there's much more.
What's your ranking out of those five you named?
I would have Jordan first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie. I would have a tie at second. No, I'd have a tie at second.
Four.
Serena Williams and Tom Brady. And let me tell you why.
White man!
Let me tell you why. I fucking hate Tom Brady. Tom Brady is fucking, he was MAGA. He played for the fucking Patriots. Seven Super Bowls as the starting quarterback is fucking OD, man. That is nuts to play that long. He's fucking. Okay, you're right. Right, poor Tiger. Tiger, you know, Tiger's right there too. That's a tough thing.
It's what's happened in the last few years. I think Tiger, though, seriously, he was my number three.
And we didn't even mention LeBron James.
I think we have a strong top five.
All right. This is a tough one right here, this next topic, because Donnie, give me my sound.
I thought we were really talking about something. What, man?
Some of you cannot see the podcast right now. Some of you are listening audio-wise. So this is what I want you to do. I'm going to throw a bone to the Soulless Jackals right now over at the Reddit. I'm going to post, or maybe Donnie should post, this picture of Mountain Lion on the Reddit for the people that can't see it. But for the people who are watching us right now, Donnie, please put the picture on the screen of the coolest fucking cat we've ever seen before. Oh my God. This is a picture of Mountain Lion on top of somebody's fucking house. What the fuck, Rach? It's clearly a full-on Mountain Lion takeover. What the fuck?
It's clearly Photoshopped.
Definitely not. It's definitely real. There's a red car in the garage on top of the house, chilling. Chilling in a place where it probably should be, Mountain Lion. This is the greatest, single greatest Mountain Lion picture that's ever existed. And when you look at this animal, you can see the majesty, the personality, and the reason why we need to make sure that these creatures, Rachel, you can't look at that animal and say that that's not a majestic creature on top of somebody's crib chilling.
It looks bigger than a mountain lion. It looks like an actual lion, to be honest, which is another reason I believe it's Photoshop. It's a beautiful creature. I've never said anything against that. Man, I've never said it's not. I'm looking at it. Do you see the blurriness under it?
There's no blurriness. What you are is you're the number one villain of Mountain Lion. You are the Lex Luthor of Mountain Lion. Is what you are.
I got bad news.
What?
It's not. It's a real picture. It's not Photoshopped, but it's not a real lion. Hold on. I'm gonna link it to this.
Oh my God!
I told you. I told you. It doesn't even look like a mountain lion. It looks like a tiger.
Oh my God. No.
This is the best news that you could ever give me, Dottie.
Oh God, no.
I'm sorry.
This alone could kill this segment forever.
Oh my God. And it's so
unexpected, lifelike. Unexpected ally of the week for the rest of the month for me.
So the name of this guy is John Forrest.
Clearly
white. I gotta have John on the show. Somebody please find John Forrest, because what John has done to me is unforgivable. It's not funny.
I tried to tell you this wasn't real.
I really thought that he had got up on top of that house.
You called him the most majestic. You called a statue the most majestic.
Shut up, Rachel.
You've ever seen. Matter of fact, let's start a new segment where we send statues of mountain lion to Van. Statues of these creatures. Y'all, he's so hurt.
Let's just do mailbag so we can end this godforsaken podcast.
I can't stop.
Donnie, you set me up. Donnie, you know what, Donnie? I'm going to be honest with you, Donnie. Donnie, you've played your hand one too many times on this fucking podcast. I know. Okay? It's war now. How about
Donnie,
that?
Donnie, hit the sound.
It's give Van...
Him, give him. Donnie, it's give Van him the sound. Give him the Mountain Lion sound.
It's Van against Rachel and Donnie. Donnie, you set me up. No, don't play it, Donnie. Donnie! Donnie, can I get the mailbag time? Thank you, Donnie. Mailbag. It's war. I just want to let you guys know before we get to mailbag. Before we get to mailbag, it's fucking on.
That made my whole day.
It's on. Between me and you and Rachel. You played your hand. Game is game. Game is game.
You did it to yourself.
Donnie.
Wait, Donnie. Game is game. How long did you know that it was a statue?
He knew the whole time.
No. I've known like it's been 3 minutes. I literally just moved it. My mind on roof. I'm sorry.
Can we do mailbag, please? Thank you.
Yes, we can do mailbag. Hold on.
Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in.
Savon28 wants to know, what's something from your childhood that no longer exists that you regret that your hypothetical children or nieces and nephews will never get to experience?
Oh, man.
That's a good question.
Hmm.
It's a really good question.
Honestly,
that doesn't exist anymore.
Like a toy. Ooh,
I know what it is for me.
What?
MTV's Spring Break.
You pervert.
That used to be lit. I'm sorry, man. MTV's Spring Break was lit. And I don't understand why you can't watch them anymore. Like, you can't.
They don't
like,
happen. They don't go there.
No, I'm talking about why you can't watch old Spring Break shows. Mm-hmm. Like,
you've tried? MTV.
Yeah, I tried to. What about you, Rachel?
I was going to say something like The Box.
Okay, oh, that was good.
There was nothing better than being able to call your parents while they were at work and say, and this is when we had the A side and the B side of TV, and you just say, hey, can I order this video for however much it costs? It was like $1.99 or 99 cents. And to wait and watch for your favorite video to play.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think they put your name on it. I think I want to say they
didn't
said
put your name on it.
Are you sure? I feel like they upgraded.
Maybe they did.
I feel like I could have sworn at one point it was like
Donnie,
racial
stop
request.
Fucking with me. All right, with the with the with
the
stack.
The picture.
Yeah, Donnie,
picture.
Stop
it's
fucking
adorable,
with
right?
Donnie. Stop
dog
fucking
is
with
smiling.
Me. Donnie, get out of here. Stop.
The dog is smiling.
All right, I'm telling y'all, it's on. We're on Mailbag now. We've moved on.
Can I also add playing
it
outside?
Might have put your name on the box.
Playing outside.
Yeah.
Man.
All right. You know what? Because of Donnie and Rachel, we're only going to do one more Mailbag because I'm ready to get off the podcast. All right.
Let's go to Pretend Dubs. They want to know, if you could experience an album for the first time over again,
ooh,
what would it be?
Shoot, that's a good question.
That's
these
a really
great
good question.
Question.
Such a good question. You know what the answer really is?
What?
For me, the answer is Lil Wayne to Carter, and let me tell you why.
This is not a bad choice at all.
So Lil Wayne to Carter, I've been listening to Lil Wayne for so long, and I knew that he was as talented as a rapper as we had heard in Louisiana, but I was so fucking shocked when I heard the Carter because of the next level that Wayne had went through. And went to in his rapping and the production of the album, conceptually what the album was and all of that. I was literally riding around when I first heard the Carter listening to nothing else, probably for about 2 months, all around Baton Rouge, all around Miami, like all everywhere, just listening to the Carter, man. It was crazy.
Okay. I'm going to say The Blueprint.
Okay.
Because it was right around the time that I had taken all my country CDs and traded them into the CD shop, and I had gotten rap CDs, right? I was just getting into the music. I'll never forget. My sister took me up to the store. When I listened to The Blueprint and I heard all those songs and I could rap everything, I listened to it every single day on the way to school. The Michael Jackson beat on the Izzo. The song Cry
crazy.
With the Dave, not the song Cry. Song Cry, yes, that was just the one thing because I was going through a breakup. But the Never Change with the David Ruffin. And then the last song on the track had the two hidden songs and you had the Girls remix. And then, of course, Renegade. There's just too many. It was
it's
so
an amazing album.
Great. That's the one for me.
It's amazing.
It just kept getting better and better.
Okay. Well, guys, take your thinking caps off, but do not stop learning. Let me tell you something right now. Today, on August 11th, 2022, I vow revenge on both Donnie and Rachel, the two peas in the pod, Frick and fucking Frack, that colluded to embarrass me over Mountain Lion. That's fine. I accept it. Even play us fuck up. Donnie, Rachel, I will have my revenge. And by the way, rest easy for the when you least expect it. Least expect it. That's enough. I'm off the podcast. Bye. Don't take shit off. Bye. I'm off the podcast. That's it.
Donnie, take us out.
No. Hell no.